Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Laura. Welcome to another episode of Where Work Meets Life. I'm really excited about today's episode on the four-day week, a panacea for productivity. This episode is with Andrew Barnes, who is known as the architect of the four-day work week globally. He's also an author, an innovator, and as a future of work thought leader myself, I have really been focused on making people's work and lives better through the ability to work from different locations beyond the traditional office. It's not a one-size-fits-all, and there's different combinations and permutations of where we work based on us as workers, as human beings, our personality, what our team needs, etc. Similarly, the four-day week movement is about giving people different ability to buy back time in their lives through working reduced work weeks. So can they do the same amount or more in 4 days versus five? And it's not necessarily 4 days in a row. It's doing 32 hours of work and being paid for 40 hours and buying back that extra 8 hours for your work and life balance, flexibility, family, etc. And it makes for healthier, more engaged workers, and it does not affect the bottom line performance and productivity. Surprising, I know. And we're going to learn and talk about why and how this can even be feasible. So essentially, Andrew Barnes is an amazing entrepreneur, an author. In 2018, he made international headlines across the world on his data around how productivity increases when we reduce the work week to 4 days. And he really questions the notion of the traditional 5 day a week in an office idea. Andrew has done trials of this across the UK, the US, Canada, South Africa, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, and other places with over 250 companies and growing involved and over 100,000 staff and growing. And this global research is analyzed and involved with universities, including Boston College, Cambridge, Oxford, and many more. So this is the real deal. This is scientific evidence-based research, and it's a growing movement, and the governments are getting involved. This is debated at the policy level around how can we affect change in our populations. Our health systems are inundated, and if we could keep people healthier and prevent the levels of burnout that are happening and the levels of physical health impacts of overwork, if we can impact the way people live, we can essentially ease the burden on our health system. So this is a broad topic with far-reaching effects, and Andrew wrote the four-day week book in 2019. Pandemic happened. Things have continued to evolve and changed. And Andrew is at the heart of this very important movement. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Hi, Laura. Great to be here.
So Andrew, tell us what led you to create this four-day week movement.
Well, fundamentally, I used to binge read Economist magazines on a plane flying from Auckland to London. And back in 2017, I was reading about productivity in Canada and the United Kingdom. And this particular article said that the Brits were productive for 2.5 hours a day and Canadians for 1.5 hours a day. And I thought, okay, is that actually also happening in my business? And I reasoned that it was. And so I thought, could we do things differently? If I said to my team, look, what would you do differently if I said to you, I'll pay you for 5 days, you only have to work for four, but I need to get the same amount of productivity? And so this wasn't a work-life balance idea. It was working out whether I could find a way to make my company more productive.
Interesting. And it kind of goes against logic that fewer days could lead to more productivity. So maybe what you could do for us is define what you mean by 4 day week and how it can look, different ways that it can look and work.
Yeah, I think, first of all, we should probably talk a little bit about what productivity is. So I think there is a difference between being busy and being productive. So quite often we'll come into the office and we will be, you know, incredibly busy, but we'll be in meetings, we'll be having, you know, side conversations, we've got interruptions, we've got problems coming in from home. We've got all of that stuff that actually gets in the way of you actually doing the job that you paid for. All right. So the starting point is, if you can change how you work so you eliminate all of those distractions and interruptions, then you theoretically will get more done in the time. The next thing is that the 4-day week, in a way, is a little bit of a clickbait. Everybody thinks about, you know, the 3-day weekend. What we really mean is this concept of 180-100, 100% 5-day pay, 80% of time, provided we get 100% productivity. And so that translates, if you will, into working a shorter working week. Now, that could be taking a day off. It could be 2 afternoons. It could be, as often happens with our working parents, that they will work 5 days but compressed hours. So that's the concept. It's not one size fits all, and different companies use different solutions.
No, that makes a lot of sense, because as a working parent, yeah, I know that being able to pick up the kids, et cetera, means a lot to me versus having every Friday off, for example. So I love that it's not a one size fits all. And it reminds me of hybrid and remote work. Same things. It doesn't work for everyone, and it doesn't work all of the time for everyone. So I'm not surprised to hear that different companies put their own flavor on this. So And companies use time as their main measure of productivity. Why is this thinking flawed, Andrew?
Well, I think the problem is when we created the 5-day week, Henry Ford is usually credited with doing it. We were doing lots of repetitive manufacturing, you know, widget. How many widgets do you make in an hour, in a day, in a week? The problem now is that we've got, in the fourth industrial revolution, a lot of creative, cognitive, non-manufacture roles. And so we have kept that process of defining the working week. But what we've not done is determined what actually we do in it, because most organizations haven't got a measurement of productivity. When we're challenged, and which we inevitably are, by executives who say, you know, well, it wouldn't work in my business. The first question is, well, how do you measure productivity? To which, of course, the answer is, well, if you're asking me that question, you're not measuring productivity. And that is the problem that we have today. So part of the ethos of the 4-day week is actually to have that difficult conversation with your team and say, okay, how should we measure you? How do we know that we're getting productivity from you that is the equivalent of the productivity that we would get in 5 days? And so once you focus on output over time, the length of time you work is irrelevant if you can do work more efficiently and more effectively. It's working smarter, not longer.
And it reminds me so much, again, of the remote and hybrid models, because it's the same thing. It's about, we always ask, how are you measuring output, productivity, performance? And oftentimes they stumble in answering that, because it's managed by presenteeism, butts in seats, and can I see you?
That's right. And this is no different, right? I mean, I'd like to say this is a, you know, this is not an entirely new concept. Far from it. This is actually all about effective leadership, effective measurement, you know, and focusing on the things that matter. And actually understanding that if you do this, you get healthier, happier, more engaged teams. This is not rocket science.
It isn't, but I think what is a huge challenge and barrier that I see is that it Measuring by output requires difficult and crunchy conversations, we call them. So it requires managers to hold people accountable to their productivity. And it is a step up for a lot of leaders who maybe aren't used to doing that. Would you agree?
Well, yeah, but in which case, why are you paying them?
Well, exactly.
Isn't that their job? Right. So you're right. You're absolutely right. We talk a lot about, I think, management today in business, and we don't talk about leadership. And this is really about creating an environment where the leader leads, and actually what they're doing is creating an environment where their people have to take an element of personal responsibility. Because the way we always structure a four-day week, we say to individuals, you have to opt into this personally. But the goals that we set are team-based goals. And so actually, I have got a responsibility, not just to the company, but I've got a responsibility to my colleagues. Because if I waste their time and they waste mine, then at the end of the day, we don't get a four-day week. You know, so it creates an environment where it's actually bizarrely easier to manage, but possibly harder to lead.
Interesting. It's just so fascinating. And I'm curious, Andrew, about what are the most surprising impacts that your research has found about the four-day week that surprise people?
Well, I first of all, they're surprised that productivity goes up. On average, we see productivity going up, 20% or there or thereabouts. The outlier was the American one, where productivity went up 33%. What we're also seeing is things like sick days half. We're seeing that engagement scores go through the roof, team cohesion scores, creativity go up. Now, that's interesting because a lot of people would say, well, if you force me to concentrate on work, then clearly I'm not going to have time to talk to my colleagues. Actually, the evidence suggests entirely the contrary. Because people get their work done and they get it done more efficiently, bizarrely, you've got more time to engage. Now, I mean, I'm not going to take it out on the Canadians. Yes, I will. But if you are only productive for 18 minutes a day, effectively, or an hour and 20 a day, if that's all you are productive, then in effect, you only need to find, I think it's 18 minutes more per day in 4 days in order to make up for the time that you lost. I mean, you've still got hours and hours and hours to talk to people. And so that this is at the heart of this. This isn't about turning people into automatons. It's actually recognizing that, for example, if you look at a typical hour, you're interrupted once every 11 minutes, takes you 22 minutes to get back to full productivity. And in the middle of that, you'll look at your mobile phone once every 5 minutes. Now, if you eliminate all of that in 1 hour, you're getting the equivalent of 3 hours of full productivity. So you do that, once, maybe twice a day. Actually, your productivity becomes far higher than you currently are, but you've still got bags of time to spend to socialize. It's merging, I think, concepts like deep work with then taking the break.
Mm-hmm. And I can absolutely see that, and especially around cell phone addiction and just wanting to check your device, almost like a hit of adrenaline each time you see a message come through. And I just think there's just so many interruptions. It's amazing people can get any work done at all with these things at our sides.
Well, indeed. And that's why when we did it at my own business, we actually redesigned the environment into which people work. So for example, we made the desks smaller, not larger. That actually forced you to be a little bit more digital than having piles of paper. We removed those breakout tables between desks because always that conversation going on in the breakout area is way more interesting than the thing that you're doing. You have little lockers to lock your mobile phone away. So at the other end of the office, So you're not tempted to go and look at the phone. We had the rules of, you know, no more than five people in a meeting, no meeting longer than half an hour, in order to curtail overlong meetings. And we also said to people, you can't eat your lunch at your desk. Because again, there you are, you're sitting there concentrating on something, and the person next to you has got a fabulous reheated curry. And you're hungry, and all you're getting is the waft of that curry, and you're focusing on the fact that actually, you know, I'd rather eat that. So we then created a bigger lunch area, and then said to people, you have to go there. So guess what? You go there and you talk to your colleagues rather than just sitting at your desk. So a lot of this is counterintuitive, but it is actually just rethinking the way in which you work in order that you can enhance productivity, but actually create a better working environment because people are focused, but actually they've also got lots of time to socialize and share the great stories of what they did on their extra day off.
That is just so brilliant to turn the traditional way of working on its head. And I'm really curious about, you mentioned the productivity increases 20% or even more. In the States, it was almost 33% or something, which is huge. But my other question is about other impacts on mental wellness, satisfaction, joy, etc.
Well, yeah, we found that about 40% of people said their mental health actually improved. Stress levels dropped. More people said they could do their job working 4 days rather than five. As I've said, sick days halved. So that's interesting, right? Because sick days are often caused either because you are sick or you've got some admin, or frankly, you're just plain and simply, you know, burnt out. So the data is all suggesting that, you know, in terms of your personal well-being, you're getting big benefits. We find also that people sleep more. Interestingly, they cook more. So less high salt, fast food, more actually cooking. So, you know, that they also exercise more. So you're getting this sort of virtuous circle, not just for the company, but actually for society, because you're then getting healthier, happier people. They're not going into the health service. They're getting themselves a little bit fit. They're not as stressed out. So all of this is not, you know, to be clear, this is not what I was intending to do. I just wanted to improve productivity. But you get all of this for free. And this is why, for me, this is, well, it's not the silver bullet, clearly, but by gum, it actually does positively move the dial on a whole lot of issues that we're struggling with in the 21st century.
It's unbelievable. So a project that started out in the company, in your company, and you led this project, led to a whole bunch of unintended consequences or gifts, since we're in the Christmas season right now, gifts. And then it started a global movement where you made international headlines, you got asked to speak on it, to consult on it. Can you tell us what more has evolved since that project?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, we, as we said, Laura, we expected to get, I think it was an article in the local rag and maybe an article on our local TV station, which maybe 60,000 people watch. We got, each time when we announced it, when we got the results and when we made it permanent, we got over about 14,000 articles worldwide on each occasion, spread across about 120 countries with a global audience of 5.5 billion people in terms of understanding it. We were the second most read story in the New York Times after the Trump-Putin summit. So, you know, that is the impact that this created. To put it in context, we were a 320-person business in New Zealand, so we're hardly newsworthy. What's happened, of course, is that subsequently, this conversation has been picked up. I mean, we're regarded now as Time magazine's one of their most influential companies. We've been most influential company in Forbes. It's been debated at the World Economic Forum, the European Economic Forum. We have run pilots in about 10 countries. We're working now with governments all over the world to bring in and try a pilot in their own country. And what's interesting is that this is not confined to, you know, North America and Europe. I've literally just come back from Saudi Arabia last week. I have now got two groups in Saudi Arabia that are rushing to pilot it. It looks like we might get some further endorsement there. We've just done a pilot in South Africa, in Botswana. And you know, we know that equally, Russia, India, and Japan, for example, have all brought in variants of legislation to introduce reduced hours working. So this is a global phenomena, and it's not confined to the usual suspects. In fact, the first country in the world effectively to bring it in across jurisdictions in a way was the UAE. I mean, who'd have thought that Sharjah would be the first city to bring in effectively a four-day week, you know, across the border?
Yeah. This project and movement is full of surprises. Now, just to be, I guess, a cynic, or because I guess there's probably a lot of cynics that come at this thing. This is just a bunch of, you know, BS. This won't work. It's fluffy. So my question is, you collect your data, an organization goes through a pilot, and people want to prove that they can be productive because they want to hang on to this thing. And then it gets approved and they want to hang on to it. But how long do those impacts of increased productivity last? Or is it just a honeymoon phase where the person would gradually do less and less in those 4 days?
That's a very good question, Laura. And I often point to France, right? So France legislated a reduction in the work hours, not linked to productivity, of course. It went down to 35 hours. They had a short sugar rush and productivity went up, and then it continued to decline. What we do in the four-day week movement, of course, is we say that your contract of employment remains 5 days. We gift you about 40 additional days off a year, provided we get the level of productivity. But we're very clear that if the productivity or the customer service standards don't meet the objectives of the organization, back to 5 days. Now, that's the model we've been using in my business now for 5 years. We are twice as productive on a per capita basis of than our nearest competitor. So no, it hasn't gone back. And what you're seeing in other large organizations that do it, for example, Volkswagen manufacture cars on a four-day week, and they've been doing that for quite some time. So this is not something that slides, but it's something you can't take for granted. If you take this for granted, if you don't continue to work at it like anything in business, then it will slide backwards. So you can't do it. But I think we are seeing with, you know, the research that we do in our trials, they're usually about a 6-month trial, but then you do a follow-up piece of research. And what we're not seeing is backsliding. But then again, if you are doing a four-day week, you are attracting and retaining the best staff because everybody wants to work for that type of company. So there's a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy here. If you get better people, you get better output.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And I'm just curious about what types of organizations are the best fit for this. So size and industry for trying out the four-day week.
Well, there literally is no defined size. So, for example, last week, Lamborghini announced it was going to a four-day week. Major Italian bank, I think 30,000 strong, said it was going to a four-day week. We've got, you know, giants like Volkswagen and Unilever trying it. But equally, in the UK trials, my personal favorite, we had a fish and chip shop in Suffolk that went on to a 40 week. Now, how the heck could a fish and chip shop go on to a 40 week? I don't know. It did. It, for a brief moment, it became the most famous fish and chip shop in the world, because literally every single media team in the UK went out to this fish and chip shop. So, you know, no wonder business went up. but you know, this is about engaging the power of your employees to work better and work smarter. And that is applicable in every organization. Because if you think that your organization is perfect, you're kidding yourself, right?
It's always a work in progress, right? If you think it's perfect, then you better continue to look at what you're doing, because it can slide and slip so quickly.
That's exactly right. So, you know, again, this is not rocket science. It is using the power of people's desire to have more free time. So one of the most interesting pieces of research that we run is when we've had people on a four-day week, the end of the pilot, we ask them, how much do I have to pay you to go back to 5 days from 4 days? And about 15% say, you just physically can't pay me enough, just not doing it. About another 15% will need a 75% pay rise. And then, you know, a large chunk of them are going to need about 50%. So what that says is that an employee values the time off at a higher price than you are actually paying for it. And that is the motivation for them to work smarter, to be a bit more focused, to be more collegiate, because they want the prize, which they value far more than the money that you would otherwise pay.
Absolutely. And the remote work movement that I've been speaking and researching on for my career, what I see is there's always the fear of the slackers, right? So the low performers, the slackers, they're not going to work. But I would say that the slackers don't work regardless. They don't work hard regardless. So do you see this in a 4 day week initiative? Those who are slackers are not going to survive that initiative, I imagine.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because as I said, the goal is set at a team level. The responsibility is individual. So if I am not pulling my weight, now under the traditional model, I just don't pull my weight and you wait for the boss to come down and prod you and say, you know, get on with it. In this model, the person sitting next to you prods you. Because if you're doing that, you are prejudicing everybody else's day off in that week. Everybody else. So there is a personal accountability and responsibility. Now, a little bit of this relates, I think, to my own experience in the military. I mean, I think in business, we often think that you can create this goal or by sticking a, you know, objectives, company goals on the wall, and I go, oh, look, that's what we stand for. Actually, what you understand in the military is you go over the top for the person on your left and the person on your right. You don't go over the top for a flag or a mission statement. And that is what the four-day week is about. It is about creating this cohesion in a workforce, that if we work together, if we respect each other's time, if we find ways to do things better, we are getting the benefit of this. It's not just going in higher profits, because what we're getting is we're getting this additional time off that we are putting a price on far higher than the business would pay.
Absolutely. And I like to say, you're getting extra time to live your life versus time off. And that may mean doing different things physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, community-wise. I think it makes the world a better place by giving people more time.
It does. And bizarrely, one of the things that we get caught with By doing the model the way we do it, because your working week is still technically 5 days, I have to accrue 4 days leave on the 40 additional days that I gift my staff off. So what we then said is, okay, fine. We want you to give 1 day a quarter to charity or community service. We don't care what it is. We don't care when you do it. But we think you need to pay that forward. So suddenly my organization is giving, you know, 1,200 community days a year. Now, we have a problem at the moment. We have the great service clubs like Rotary struggling to get members because nobody's got any time anymore. You know, the organization that cured polio is withering on the vine. So if we change how we work to create more time, then people have the ability to give it back. And I believe that you don't just get a better business out of that, you get a better society out of that.
Beautifully said. I could listen to you for hours, but I'm thinking that we need to wrap up soon. So I want to ask you, Andrew, how do people get more information about this movement?
Well, go to the website, www.fourdayweek.com. We've got everything on there. We've got the reports. We've got all the tips and tricks. We took a view right from the get-go that you know, we're a not-for-profit. We will share everything on this. So you go there. If you're really enthusiastic, get my book. You can listen to it or read it digitally. And that's primarily because I just couldn't drink that much coffee with chief executives when I was being asked how you actually implement this. So those are a couple of places that are easy to go to, and lots and lots and lots of information, examples from businesses all over the world.
Beautiful. So the book, The 4 Day Week, was published in 2019 before the pandemic. I would argue the world's changed and evolved since the pandemic in some ways. So how much of the book is still broadly applicable today, or do you have another edition coming?
It's all applicable today because it was really just focused on how we implemented it in Perpetual Guardian and what were the lessons that we had to draw on that. So it's very, very applicable. Yes, there is a new version in the works, but that's looking a little broader now. That's looking beyond the company to the impact on society.
Yeah, I love the societal impacts here. Organizational impacts and bottom line, important. Society, you know, is the be all and end all to have a better world than the one we do, to continue becoming a better human race. So to end, I have two final questions I ask all my guests. What is one book or podcast that you'd recommend? So what do you listen to for your own development and growth, Andrew? Well, you read, obviously. You read the Economist article.
You know, my go-to book is a book on Antarctic exploration. Primarily, and there's lots of them, anything by Shackleton, of course, but my personal favorite is a book called The Worst Journey in the World by Apsley Cherry Gerard. And the reason why I like that book is it shows what can be done by people working as a team in incredibly difficult conditions. But it also has this bit that the task that they were sent on was completely and utterly pointless. And by the time that they'd got to Cape Crozier and come back, you know, to get these emperor penguin eggs, they literally, it was just pointless. There was no need for them to have done it. But yet, you got all of this fantastic stuff that happens on the journey. And I think it is the triumph of the human achievement. What humans can do working together, they can absolutely overcome all sorts of stuff. So some of these type of books, which you think, why would that be a management book, actually, I think, cause you to question. We talk about leadership in business, but you know, leadership actually when you are struggling against the elements, often that's real leadership.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, you've won innovation awards. I think innovators connect the dots between fields that are unrelated. And that's exactly what you do, Andrew. So I'm so glad you shared that book versus something more mainstream. Awesome. My final question is if you could have one wish for a better world when it comes to how we work and live, what would that be? And how would that play out?
Well, you know, it's got to be the implementation of the four-day week. And I think the reason for that is that many of the challenges and problems that we face in the world today come as a consequence of the fact that we haven't got enough time. And if we create more time, I think we can solve things, solve those issues. We've got certainly more opportunity to solve them. Because often, you know, it is the rushed decision or the rushed job that causes us the problem rather than something that is a little bit more thoughtful and a little bit more considered.
Well put. I'm inspired. Thank you for your time today. I feel like this movement is something that organizations should be listening to, reading about, and following, because it's the organizations that advance their workplaces and evolve to be better human-centric places to work. That's where the next generations are going to want to hang their shingle. So thank you, Andrew Barnes, for the amazing work that you and your co-founder and the 4-Day Week movement are continuing to do.
Thank you, Laura.
Stay well. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Where Work Meets Life. If you found this content valuable, please rate and review the episode and share with others who may benefit. Visit me on my website at drlaura.live and sign up for my monthly e-newsletter full of tips and resources. I'm also a passionate keynote speaker and would be delighted to speak with you on your speaking needs. Stay well.